Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I am joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco from the 10th Inning Stretch. And Kevin, you know, we have a lot of excitement that's gone on this week because of the 4th of July celebration here in America, and nothing better than baseball and fireworks on the 4th of July.
Oh, you ain't kidding, man. Hey, I'm proud to be an American, or at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died who gave that right to me. Yeah, that's been my earworm all day today, Lee Greenwood. We'll talk about that later on.
It's got Lee Greenwood on the brain right now. But it was an exciting week. It was fun to watch the games. I watched quite a few of them around the league yesterday to see stuff that they'd done. And Kansas City, it looked like they were, you know, really had gone all out. And Dan Vaughn was out posting stuff about the grounds crew and what they were doing for that game yesterday, which I thought was pretty cool. So
Miller time.
That's right. So it's good to see America rally around something, because right now it seems pretty difficult to get us to rally around anything right now. So good to see baseball getting people back to the parks there. So
yeah, I was kind of using some gallows humor in St. Paul during the fireworks. And I noticed they always like to end the fireworks with Ray Charles doing America the Beautiful. And I'm standing there with a couple friends. I said, yeah, they always end it with Ray Charles doing America the Beautiful. I said, oh, if you could only see the fireworks right now. Thank you. I'll be here all weekend. Try the veal.
At least he could hear them. How about that? I don't know if that has any benefit for you as a deaf person, and maybe I shouldn't be making humor about that. So please send your letters to Kevin Lucco at something. All right. So
death threats, anthrax loaded envelopes. Be creative, folks.
Exactly.
Make sure it's going to be something I'm not going to walk away from.
Well, Kevin, before talking about the teams in the league, we do want to mention that there was player and pitcher of the week from week 7. TJ Bennett from the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks was chosen by us, as was Frank Carvalho from the Gary Southshore Railcats was chosen as the pitcher of the week. The league didn't agree with us whatsoever.
Yeah, well, they're wrong.
That's what I say. That's what I say. Bennett had himself quite a week out there, hitting .448 in 7 games, drove in 9 and scored 6 runs. Carvalho was 1-0 with a 0 ERA and had 2 saves to go along with that. So, and that wasn't any of those cheap ones either. The guy went 2 innings and both his save outings. So we're going to give him a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, you know, let's give a reliever a little love here once in a while. It just seems like it's always starting pitchers that win it every week.
I couldn't agree with you more, and it's nice to see. You know, I thought, again, it was the fact I think he went 3 innings in the win that he had, and then 2 innings in both of the saves, and I thought, you know, you just don't see those kind of things from a reliever, especially a lefty reliever these days. But
well, we're not seeing that out of anyone's bullpen. It's kind of a league-wide dilemma right now. A lot of teams have bens that are just struggling mightily.
Later on the same day, the June pitcher of the month was chosen. We chose Kyle Kinsman, and the player of the month coming from the Sioux Falls Canaries, Ale Lago. The league then stole our recommendations moments later, but we were first. We just want to say that.
Yes, we were.
465 for Lago in 20 games, or excuse me, in 25 games. Had a hit in all but one of those 25 games last month, which is pretty impressive. 15 multi-hit games. Kyle Kinsman, 1-1 with a 1.40 ERA, which 38 innings pitched. You'd think you'd do a little bit better than 1-1 in 6 starts with that kind of ERA.
Well, let's not make me go back to one of my rants I had a year or so ago about the wins category.
To be honest, that is specifically why I brought it up. I'm going to tell you the truth.
Poking the bear, I see.
Exactly right. That is exactly right. So, well, we're going to get Kevin on a little rampage earlier on today in the show. Well, Kevin, let's jump into each of the teams around the league, and we'll begin with the St. Paul Saints. And the big trade of the week was Burt Reynolds sent back to the Sioux Falls Canaries. We love Burt. He had a great run last year in St. Paul, but he looked like kind of the numbers game just didn't have a place for him on the team anymore.
No, the Let's just face it, he wasn't hitting, and I have to wonder if his collision with the outfield wall in Sioux Falls has had lingering effects on him. Not that his year was going that great anyway, but it seemed like it's gone downhill even further after that, and his start with the Canaries has been less than sterling, too. So, you know, we're on the outside looking in, but I just got to wonder if we're seeing Reynolds that's at 100%. Who knows, though? We might just see Reynolds get a turnaround, just like he, you know, it'd be like a role reversal from last year, where when he went from Sioux Falls and lit it up for St. Paul, maybe he'll get healthy and do the same thing for Sioux Falls. So we'll have to play, wait and see on that. I do like St. Paul's haul from that trade, getting Adrian Nieto. Adrian Nieto's reversionary rights, which it just seems to me when someone like Nieto gets signed during the year, it just seems like he's holding a spot for somebody in Double A or Triple A. Usually guys that are experienced like that, they don't have a long-term plan. They're just trying to fill a hole within the organization. So who knows? He may be available later this year or next year, and there's a player to be named later, which if Sioux Falls were to follow the Pennant race altogether, we could be seeing a key player coming back to St. Paul come trade deadline.
Absolutely. You know, they had quite a deep starting pitching staff to begin the season. Injuries have kind of depleted that a little bit, but if they should get a little healthier as the season rolling along, maybe one of those guys comes there at a time where the Saints need a starter, and that could be a huge difference. Speaking of starters there for us, Kevin, we came last week's show, we talked about there was the loss of Nick Belzer, and then just as we started last week's show, Spencer Jones was signed and was heading on his way to Mexico. Then this week we find out that Blake Schmidt and Joey Wong go on the disabled list, and there's some concern about Eddie Medina's elbow. Boy, talk about a really bad time to have a lot of stuff go against you this way.
Yeah, as Sean Aaronson stated, it's kind of like a mass unit with the St. Paul Saints at this point, and with the stretch of guy coming up, it's just horrible timing, man. You know, some really young players are going to have to step up. Jake Mathis got hit hard again last night. He's gotten hit hard his last two starts against Fargo and Winnipeg, and those are the teams that you got a man up against. They're going to need Ryan Zimmerman to step up and show that he's a professional pitcher. Tom Curtin finally got another start last Monday night against Lincoln. Three shutout innings, but then Mother Nature shut him down. But I really liked what I saw from him. For a young guy, he just seemed very composed on the mound and threw strikes. So maybe they've got something with Curtin. But right now, they're only true established pitcher is Dustin Crenshaw, because with Medina, we just don't know, because the word is that there's a growth in his elbow that is causing friction when he's pitching, which is causing his mechanics to get out of whack, and he's got his velocity still pretty decent, but his command has been really off in his two starts. It looked a little better last Wednesday against Lincoln, but it was four runs in six innings, and he did walk five guys. So I don't know if it's going to take him getting used to pitching with that, or if it's, you know, it's a tough call. If you go under the knife, you don't know how long you're going to be out. So, yeah, it's a tough time for St. Paul. The pods are visible, and Mike Devine is back off the inactive list, so that gives overused bullpen a pretty good boost.
Yeah, the thing about it, though, too, is that, like, they jumped out tonight to a 5-2 lead over Winnipeg through the first three innings of tonight's ball game. But you look at that and you think, five runs really isn't enough for this, you know, this team to hold on to leads lately. You know, they gave up nine against Winnipeg last night and battered in a few of these games recently where they're being scored on. And so, you know, Mike Devine, as you mentioned, is a big addition because it kind of gives some extra help to this bullpen and takes some pressure off them. But is this a team that's going to have to score eight or nine runs just to try to win games because your starting pitching is going to only give you three or four innings a night right now?
Right, and he does have a lot of arms to go to in the bullpen, but boy, it doesn't take too long for them to get a little overworked if your starters aren't getting into the sixth or seventh inning. It's funny, I was my good friend Craig Kuhlman, I was messaging with him last night when the Saints jumped out to a 3-0 lead. I said they're going to need a lot more than that tonight, and I was pretty prophetic on that statement.
Boy, you weren't kidding about that. And making it tougher for the Saints right now is the fact that those Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks are just red hot right now. Winners of 15 of their last 17 games. This is a team that both of us thought was going to be the cream of the crop in the North Division, and they're looking to be just that right now.
Yeah, I hate to say, but they might make us look right for once. Usually, if we're predicting them to do good things, it's usually the kiss of death. But right, there's not much to not like about Fargo at this point, and I guess I've kind of felt it. I just thought with that roster, if these guys are playing up their capabilities, I was kind of surprised to see them get off to a slow start. But boy, they've really turned it on, and I think we're seeing a team that I'd say once again probably going to be at the top of the division come September.
You mentioned about the Saints having a tough part of their schedule coming up. If there is kind of an Achilles heel that I would look at the Red Hawks, it's in the fact that in the six games that they had against St. Paul and Winnipeg, they gave up 28 runs in those six games. And if you take away the one game where they gave up just a one run against St. Paul, 27 runs in five games is really not what you expect if you're going to be a serious contender for a championship against teams that you know you're going to be competing against to win that division.
Right, and I think it's at the beginning of the season, Fargo's bullpen was really lights out, but I think they've been scrapping lately. I know there was a game against Winnipeg that they won, but Joe Filomeno, who's usually like a one-inning guy, had to go 2 innings and he threw 50 pitches just to wrap the game up. So keep an eye on that as the year goes on if we're going to see that Fargo get to the point where their bullpen's going to get a little worn out also. They've got enough good starters with Jan Marino, Cassie, and others where you wouldn't think the bullpen's going to be overused, but it just kind of seems to be a theme through the league that starters aren't getting deep in games and bullpens are wearing down and not as good as they're used to seeing them.
Last week, you and I talked about that Fargo-Moorhead had the opportunity to kind of make some distance and make some inroads in this division, considering they were facing St. Paul and Fargo. This week, it's Winnipeg who has a five-game series against St. Paul, and then I believe heads on to face Fargo after that. So this is their opportunity to start making some inroads. And the question is, are in this five-game series they have against the Saints right now, is this their opportunity to even get ahead of St. Paul?
Well, you look at it, I think they were either 2.5 or 3.5 behind St. Paul going into it. If you take 4 out of 5 against St. Paul, you've gained 3 games in 5 days, and now St. Paul's on the outside looking in. So Winnipeg got off to a good start last night, and we'll see how that momentum carries through the rest of the series. St. Paul, I think even if you win 3 out of 5 now, you should be ecstatic. If you only get 2 out of 5, you're all right with that. You only lost a game. So, but can't look at it like we only need to get 2 games. They gotta play greedy right now. They've got to be thinking, well, let's get the last 4 and put Winnipeg in the rear view mirror for a while. So it'll be interesting to see how it turns out. It's just very rare we see the 5-game series, and now we're seeing a 5-game series that has a lot on the line.
You know, I for Saints fans, I think they remember a couple of seasons ago when this was, I think it was in August when the two teams were fairly close to one another, and St. Paul had to make up an additional rain delayed game up there, so there was a 5-game series in up there. And I think they barely crept away with the one victory in Winnipeg. And from St. Paul's standpoint, with your pitching staff being in such flux, this looks like for Winnipeg, I think you have to think that you have to win 4 of these 5 games right now. You can't just come away with 3 of 5. This has to be a 4 out of 5 game victory.
Yeah, and you got to look at it. You're catching St. Paul at the right time. there's no feeling sorry for other teams in the American Association. I'm sure Winnipeg's not feeling one bit sorry for St. Paul having guys hurt. You got to have that killer instinct at this point where you got to be thinking four or five wins out of the five. Let's get into a playoff spot and don't look back.
Since Kevin's already talking about how well he's been doing with his predictions, we do want to talk about the fact of a couple of weeks ago we were discussing Kevin McGovern coming out of the bullpen and if that was just kind of a temporary thing, or Kevin brought up about that it was probably just because of an off day. Winner of four straight games now for Kevin McGovern. So good call by you right there, Mr. Luco.
Well, I'm not smart. I just listen to the right people, so...
Well, there's going to be some people out there wondering what the team should start doing with this Tyler Hill, because, boy, he sure is putting up some huge numbers. And as Josh Romanski is close to returning to the team, you got to wonder what they're going to do with him.
You know, our David Scrivens, who was on with us earlier this season, I shot a message to him, asked him, what is Tyler Hill doing in this league? And he said, I have no idea. It looks like he's done it all for Winnipeg since he's shown up there. And as we alluded to last week, what happens when Romanski's ready? And my thought was maybe one of them ends up playing first base because Kyle Martin has struggled mightily. But now Martin had a two-home run game against St. Paul last night, so maybe Martin's kind of seeing the pressure that, hey, I better get things going because there's a guy in the dugout that could be taking my spot once he's off the inactive list. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that all shakes up in Winnipeg.
Well, with Fargo, St. Paul, and Winnipeg having a lot of series against each other coming up, this is going to be a great opportunity for teams like Gary and Chicago to make up some ground. They face each other quite a bit over the next couple weeks, have a three-game series in Gary and a three-game series in Chicago. So they're going to have a chance to either to knock each other out and at the same time make some ground on the other three teams above them.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how that will shake out because if you have those six games and they go 3-3, neither of them really accomplished much. But if one of them can show a little superiority and go, let's say, 5-1 in those six games, that's a good time to make up some grounds while the teams above you are all beating up on each other.
Golden opportunity for both of them. The Milwaukee Milkmen, we do still want to mention, are playing pretty credibly on the road right now after losing 2 out of 3 in Sioux Falls, which is nothing to feel ashamed about that. They go on to Sioux City and win 2 out of 3 there.
Yeah, they had a really good chance of winning last night, too. It took Sioux City 12 innings to finally knock off the Milkmen. And, yeah, I was watching the end of that. It just took, like, the right part of the order you had. Who got on base, but then Samson hit him over, and
Michael Lang, I think it was.
Yeah, they just got to the right part of the lineup where you just had a feeling that okay, these guys are going to end it now, and fortunate souls that stuck around Lewis and Clark Park at the finally see fireworks around midnight.
Better late than never, I guess is the way to look at that.
Yeah, there's pretty good fireworks down there. They had a really good crowd on the 3rd for the fireworks show, but not as good last night. But I suppose there's other fireworks shows going on around the city on the 4th where maybe the one at the ballpark wasn't as much of a sell as it was the night before where it was probably the only one going on. But I've seen one in Sioux City, and well, granted, it was many, many years ago, but they put on a good show, and that's the time where they get people to come out to the ballpark.
Well, I do want to say there was quite a fireworks show in my neighborhood last night, and when I drove down the street today, it looked like a war zone had gone down in the neighborhood. Well, let's head to the South Division there, Kevin, and the Cleveland Railroaders, like we thought about Fargo and how they would jump to the top of the division here. We thought that about Cleveland in the South, and they sure have made a difference winning 9 of their last 10.
Yeah, I just kind of think they got into the right part of the schedule where the matchups were favorable for them, and they took care of business, something they would probably even tell you themselves that earlier this season they did not get the job done against teams that are probably considered to be lesser quality of opponent. But Obviously, I'm going 9-1 your last 10. You're taking care of business as we're looking at the schedule. They don't play against like Kansas City and Sioux City until August, but when they do, they have a nice long stretch where they're playing those games within divisions. So it'd be wise for them to take care of business against the teams you're playing now and try to get a little bit of a buffer built up before you get back against the two teams chasing you.
Yeah, they have a huge stretch of games. I think 15 of the next 17 are against teams with a losing record. So this is a golden opportunity for them to put some distance out there against the rest of their division, especially with Sioux City and Kansas City battling against some what we'll call higher competition. No disrespect to the teams that don't have winning records right now, but this is an opportunity for Cleburne to really do something and to grab hold of this division. And I got to tell you, Kevin, and looking at the success that they have had recently, it has been that bottom of the order. You and I talked a few weeks ago about how guys that we had seen kind of put up numbers last season, a Hunter Clannon, a Nick Rotola, a Logan Trowbridge, really were not putting up numbers at all. But boy, that sure has changed for them over the last week, and that has been kind of the catalyst to their success.
Right, and I think guys kind of see that when you come in and all of a sudden you're kind of sinking a little lower in the lineup chart, and a lot of times they'll send a message to a batter that, hey, I need to get things going out, especially in this league where you have an extended slump, you're looking for a different team to play on. So that might have been motivation for those guys on the railroaders to kick it in gear a bit.
I think you're absolutely right about that. Speaking of kind of kicking it in gear, how about the performance of Michael Gunn so far this season?
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. We were looking at his stats before the show, and right now his ERA is down a full 2 runs from a year ago. You have to wonder if pitching coach Mike Jeffcoat has had an effect on Gunn. And, you know, you get a guy that's been in the majors as your pitching coach. As much as people in Cleveland like Smoke Pruitt, Jeffcoat had a better resume from his major league career, and maybe the wisdom he's brought in with them has had an effect on Mr. Gunn.
Absolutely, having quite a year this year. Speaking of quite a year, last year we watched Tommy Collier roll out to this after kind of a slow start where he was 1-3 and become the pitcher of the year in the American Association. Spent a good portion of the start of this season on the disabled list, but since coming off last week, he has looked incredible.
Yeah, two very good Tommy Collier-like outings. And, yeah, for the rest of the league, hey, guess what? Tommy's back. And there was nobody better in the league, arguably, last year than Tommy Collier. And boy, if he's got things going now, every 5 days, the T-Bones are in for a treat.
Speaking of treat, the Sioux City Explorers have kind of been struggling a little bit, losing 2 out of 3 against Milwaukee. And they had a big blow when Jason Garcia, who was leading the league in wins, joined the Tampa Bay Rays.
Right. You know, I saw the tweet about, you know, I just kind of glanced really quick that Forrest pitcher is signed by the team. I just threw my way it was Taylor Jordan that got signed, and then when I read a little further, it was like, well, Jason Garcia. And Garcia, if you remember, last year was the guy that Gary De La Cruz punched up in Fargo, so I guess that was the first time I had heard of about Garcia, and hey, he pitched okay last year, but he's really kicked it in the gear right now. So, De La Cruz punched out Garcia. Well, Garcia's with the MLB team. What's De La Cruz doing this year?
Yeah, I'm not playing anywhere that I'm aware of. You know, Kevin, before the show began, you and I were talking about kind of the job that Steve Montgomery has done there with Ryan Flores. Him and Bobby Post have done a great job in getting Flores back on the right track. Now he's got kind of a new reclamation project to work on out there with this new kid they've signed.
Yeah, they signed Niall Ball from the Bancroft Bandits of the Pioneer Collegiate League, which I know most people listening to the show are familiar with the Northwoods League. The Pioneer Collegiate League is a much smaller version of that league. And Ball was pitching as a post grad, as a player that did not have any eligibility left for college, but then had nowhere to pitch, and you're allowed so many on your team. And word must have got around, or must have got to the Sioux City management, because they're going to take a chance on the kid. He's pitched one game so far in relief and one scoreless inning. So we'll see if they can turn Ball into a prospect.
Well, you know, it's one of those situations that we talk about each year where the difference between a team battling for the playoffs and maybe even going all the way is how successful you are in getting those rookies with not only the demands of having five rookies on your club, but also the salary cap restrictions that you have. You got to get some production out of that. And if they can find a serviceable arm out of their bullpen that could give them, you know, let's say 25, 26 outings this year, and post, you know, a 3.5 ERA, that'd be a huge deal for their club.
Yeah, it's funny. I was at a game yesterday, and I was talking to a guy about the roster situation and how you got to have five rookies if you want a 23-man roster. And both teams, you bury one rookie as a backup catcher or a backup infielder, and you bury one as a mop-up guy in the bullpen, and then the other three, you hope you get some production out of. So, yeah, it's a bonus if you've got rookies in your roster that you can turn to in these situations.
We move on to the Sioux Falls Canaries, who are finally out of the slump. Didn't fare particularly well in Kansas City, but looked a lot better than what they have after suffering through a 9-game losing streak. Neither of us, I think, really saw them as the division winners, but we knew this was a team that could battle and stay competitive, and it looks like maybe they're getting back in the groove that we saw earlier in the year.
Yes, they are. It's with them, I think the whole key is going to be what are you going to get out of your pitching staff? If they get some guys to step up and give them some good starts, I think they can get right back into the thing in the South Division. Thing to look out for now is Michael Hart, who is having a tremendous season for them. Go for a ball in the outfield in Kansas City and was injured out of the play, left the game a batter later and has been out of the lineup a couple of days for Sioux Falls. So you hope for their sake that that's not a long-term issue.
It's a big deal for them because Graham Lowe, who's been taking over the catching duties since Nieto was signed by the Miami Marlins organization, suffered a concussion a couple weeks ago, and Hart was filling in for some of those catching times and was expected to spell Lowe for a little bit right there. And if he's hurt, this means the team has to make another move to try to come up with a catcher right now. And you know, you just don't find catchers just laying around waiting for jobs that have really quality guys at this time of the year. So this is going to become a big point for manager Mike Meyer. We're going to see how well that Rolodex is working for him.
Oh, I got a couple friends in Sioux Falls, and I don't know how well they could catch the ball, but we got them. If they could actually crouch behind the plate, they could take up a lot of space. But I don't think they could really throw many guys out, and I guess catching the ball could be an issue. So maybe they're just best left in the crowd.
One thing that we've looked at that really looks like that has helped to turn the team around over the last week has been that pitching staff. Six of the pitchers from their bullpen have not given up a run over the last 7 games, and that'll keep you in games, that's for sure.
Yeah, as we've talked about before, just like hitting is contagious, so is pitching. And I know they have Taylor Hill that they can trot out every 5 days, who's been brilliant for them too, so... You know, you hope that he gets a good start and they kind of just build upon that and try to play their own little game atop this. And I think for the sake of the franchise, this franchise needs to stay in the division race and get people in Sioux Falls talking about this ball club a bit, get some people to the ballpark. And frankly, I wish there would be more of a buzz about the team and maybe the politicians locally would be a little more favorable about getting a new ballpark built downtown. I know Jack Michaels on our show the other week was saying that there's a A lot of charm in the birdcage, and I just kind of bit my tongue because it's just time to go. Their ballpark reminds me of Midway Stadium in its dying days. Yeah, there's charm to it, but you gotta move them somewhere where there's just some. They just need a much more comfortable ballpark to watch a game at.
Charm only takes you so far, I would say, to be honest with you. We did want to
I
mention.
No, I don't have much.
We did want to mention too, because I don't think we mentioned this last week. Mitch Glasser, who is not only was a player with Sioux Falls, but was serving as their hitting coach, joins the Israeli national team to compete in the World Baseball Classic. So, congratulations to Mitch out there, and we hope that you are a difference maker on them, to helping to get them
I think
to.
He has been so far. I thought I saw a stat where, like, in a couple games, he had, like, 7 or 8 RBIs already.
Okay, well, good for him. See, that's the kind of thing we like to see. So, what, he's competing in Pool C or something, or Pool B, I think, right now, to help out the team, though. So, congratulations on that. So, Mitch, we know you're gonna do your country well. Serve your country well, excuse me. Lincoln, we move on to next. Kevin, they're coming up with a really tough stretch right now over the next 11 games. They have some of the tougher opponents coming up with Sioux City and Sioux Falls and Kansas City here. So I think a couple weeks from now, although with just 3.5 games out right now in the South Division, a couple weeks from now we could be talking about either Lincoln is a serious competitor in this division, or maybe their time in the league for 2019 might be over.
Yeah, it's very true. I guess their fortune right now is that nobody's pulling away with the division in the South, but like you said, if they can't get things on track in the next couple of weeks, and somebody like Cleburne keeps rolling, then yeah, you could see that deficit get to 8 or 9 games, and at that point, it's just really tough to make games up. So it's a very critical time for the South Dogs. Without knowing any inside intel, Chris Smith left the game early in St. Paul on July 3rd. I noticed in one at bat that he was limping pretty badly trying to run to first base, and he has not been in the lineup since. So if they don't have Chris Smith in that lineup, that's just a huge hole to try to fill.
Absolutely. One of the nicest guys you'll find, too, and a great leader for that club. That'd be a very tough blow for them if he winds up being out for a little while. The team, though, taking a chance on Tyler Herr again, a name that we have seen in this league over the last few years, has had some real big ups and some real big downs, and manager Bobby Brown giving him another shot there in Lincoln.
Yeah, I did not even think he was still in baseball, but yeah, I saw him pop up on Lincoln's roster, and he came in the pitch one of the nights in St. Paul.
We move on to the Texas AirHogs, where we understand that they are looking to focus on garnering as much quality starting pitching as they can find out there. And so they made a move already this week with Kansas City bringing in Eric Manoah. I hope I'm saying that. Eric Manoah Jr., I guess I should say. So looking to try to keep themselves in games earlier to help this young Chinese team to be able to compete more and to stay, I guess, more focused on games is what they're looking for here.
Yeah, you know, it all makes sense, too. As much as youthful enthusiasm will carry you a little far when you get into the dog days of the season, that enthusiasm can wane a bit if you find yourself constantly out of games early on. So, yeah, if they can get some arms to eat up some innings and not make it where you have to rely on your Chinese players as much, it'll just be very beneficial for the AirHogs. I mean, Stuart Iams, outfielder, had to come in and pitch 3 innings the other night.
That's never a good situation. Never a good situation at all. I do want to mention quickly, St. Paul jumped out to a 9-2 lead in Milwaukee, up 5-4 over Fargo right now. That won't matter when the show is posted, but there it is anyway. Okay, Kevin, let's talk about other independent news going on out there. And the American Association All-Star rosters were selected by managers and media people for the teams, and we're going to find out about that team coming up real soon.
Yeah, I believe the word is there will be a Facebook Live show emanating from the St. Paul Saints Facebook account. I believe it's coming up on Monday, July 9th. At that time, no players are going to know about it ahead of time, so it will be revealed at that point. So there'll be a little bit of suspense there, and after that, we'll know who's coming, and Rob and I will pretend to be experts, telling the folks who got snubbed.
Speaking of experts, though, you can go out to the 10th inning stretch blog spot out there where Kevin has already chosen who he believes should have made the All-Star team out there. I'm looking over his list right now and find it to be quite incredible that he has chosen this particular group, because I find very little grievance with it whatsoever. So go out and take a look at that. You can either go out there and search that directly at give us the address real quick, Kevin.
10th, as in 10th, innstretch.blogspot.com. I'm getting a little worried, though, because a couple guys I've chose, one is a little banged up now, and one's starting to struggle to play a bit. So keep in mind when I did make the choices of what their stats were at the time, I did list them. So I know that my choices are going to be, you know, I'm a little dark horse here and there. So it'll be interesting to see if my choices jive with the rest of the leagues.
Don't try to justify, Kevin. They're quality picks out there, and so you be confident about them. You can also find the site for Kevin's article out there by going out to the Minor League Sports Report site and going to the American Association page. And in the bottom right-hand corner there is the 10th inning blog spot, which we're going to have to put another link out there on the site so it's even easier to find, because we love Kevin. So we're going to do that today. Not like that, but we're going to have to give you an even more prominent spot.
I think you put like a little Mr. Yuck sign on there.
Yeah, I think there's a big question mark. It's like, you know, guess what you can find behind curtain 3 or something out there.
Hey, as all of us that grew up in the 70s know, Mr. Yuck is green, and yes, Mr. Yuck is mean.
We also talk about the Can-Am League, Frontier League, and Atlantic League also chose their All-Star rosters, and a few former American Association players made themselves known on those rosters.
Yeah, former Lincoln Salt Dog, Jose was elected to the Can-Am League, and Mikey Reynolds, who began the year with the Kansas City T-Bones, was also elected as a utility player. So there's just going to be a little bit of American Association touch to the Can-Am team. It's going to be interesting to see how they compete with the leagues having separate rules, where the Frontier League mostly has younger guys, and Can-Am has guys that have a bit more experience. We'll see who wins, if it's youth over experience or what happens.
Cecilio Pimentel in the Atlantic League joins from Sugarland, so congratulations to him as well. Now we move on to four new rules added in the Atlantic League that will be beginning soon. And before we talk about this, I just want to tell fans out there that to buckle up and sit down for a while, because I have a lot of grievances about this. So Kevin, let's talk about those four rules.
Well, we stumbled upon a blog from Mike Ashmore, who covers the Somerset Patriots in the Atlantic League, and I'm reading directly from his blog, which you can find at blogs.mycentraljersey.com. And he says, according to multiple people with direct knowledge of the situation, the Atlantic League is set to implement four new rules for the second half of the 2019 season. And here they are. Pitchers will now be required to step off of the rubber when attempting a pickoff. I don't get why. I mean, our pickoffs are a huge part of the game right now, where they feel like they need to make it where you can't pick them off as easily.
Make like more box rules?
Stolen bases, or
yeah, make more box or something. Okay.
Yeah, that makes the game. You know, I always say when I go to games, I wish there were more box.
Yeah, well,
of course,
exactly.
Of course, somebody probably said that during the championship series a couple of years ago too. Joel Stegner accommodated them.
But, you know, the thing about that, too, is that I think, okay, so mechanics, I think if you talk to any pitching coach on the planet, they would tell you that mechanics is the number one thing that makes for a success for a pitcher over any other thing. Now, arm strength and speed and all that kind of stuff. If there's something wrong with your mechanics, you're done. Okay, let's just start with that right there. So let's do something to try to make those mechanics even a little bit more off kilter or something. What a great idea that is. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
We'll move the mountain back further eventually.
Let's add that while we're at it too. Okay, rule number two.
One foul bunt with two strikes is permitted before a strikeout is called. So, kind of like a courtesy strike in beer league softball.
And then you're out.
Except you don't have a case of Miller Lite waiting behind your dugout for after the game's over.
So if I'm an American, or excuse me, if I'm an Atlantic League player, and now I'm let's say I'm a guy who makes contact, who has good contact. Okay, I'll battle through an 8 or 9 pitch at best. Something that's supposed to be one of the most important aspects, especially for leadoff guys, that you're trying to work that pitcher so that he's out by the fifth or sixth inning. Now, all he's got to do is get me to foul off a couple of pitches with two strikes, and I'm out. And now I got a worse batting average. I got more strikeouts. What is the rationality behind this thing? This is just stupid.
I don't know if they want the guys to execute that sacrifice bunt because that's another exciting part of the game that we all like to go to the ballpark and see. I don't get it.
But as stupid as that rule is, rule number three, Kevin.
Batters are allowed to, quote, steal first base on any pitch not caught in flight. In short, it's like the drop third strike rule. Except it extends to the entire at bat.
So a wild
So,
pitch or a pass ball almost automatically assures that I'm getting first base, no matter where it is in the count.
except if they beat you to first base and you just pissed away in a bat.
Well,
So now, in that quick little bit of judgment, you've got to figure out, okay, is this going to be worth doing or not?
I'm assuming then you get a stolen base at first. Is that your stat? Is that how that gets recorded then, I guess, or something, or?
I don't know if you get a gold star
Wow.
or a bar on your jersey or what, but and what's going to constitute that you tried to run to first? Did you take like a step and say, "Ooh, no, I'm not going to make it. No, never mind. I'm not running." So yeah, just another thing for the umpire to have to try to think about.
And let's just look at it from this standpoint. So a ball comes inside on a batter to the point, let's say he moves a little bit out of the way. Now I'm supposed to judge as an umpire, did he move out of the way to get away from the pitch, or was he thinking it was coming inside and he had a chance to start making a move towards first or something? Especially if it bounces in the dirt a little bit. I look at baseball, and I'm not, first of all, let me state for the record, I'm not one of these purist guys who believes that baseball should never change. I'm perfectly okay with having rule changes that make sense, but these rules just seem like we just want to change the game. So here's some ideas to do that, just for literally no benefit to the game. Am I off base on that?
Well, you got to keep in mind the game of baseball has been flawed since they read the dimensions wrong and put the pitching mound 60 feet and 6 inches away from home plate. So, it's been a screwed up game since day one. But yeah, we know it's a flawed game, but it's not flawed enough for you need to try to reinvent the wheel with all these whacked out rules. And frankly, people in the stands just aren't going to pay that much attention to anyway. So I just don't see what it's accomplishing other than basically the Atlantic League is a paid guinea pig for MLB right now. I just don't know how else to put it.
And tell me this, because I think the fan part is the I think the thing that's being missed here. So I'm a fan of the Somerset Patriots early later on the season, and a guy standing at the plate and fouls off a pitch and is all of a sudden out. And I'm like, hey, what? Where'd this guy go to? Okay, or a ball bounces in the dirt and rolls away from the catcher, and the guy runs to first base on a 1-0 pitch. And I'm like, how did that guy get there? I mean, you're going to have to educate a whole new generation of people about rules who have listened to the same rules their entire life. And now I'm going to teach them that this is the way that the sport goes. This sounds like the NFL version of the catch rule, as far as I'm concerned. This is just a dumb idea. But rule number four, Kevin.
You're gonna have to put like with the roster card you give fans. You're gonna have to put like a suit that's got all the new rules in it. And well, the last one's kind of not so bad. The check swing now becomes a little more batter friendly, so I suppose you can go around a little more on your swing and not have it called a strike. So that one's not. That one seems to be the less egregious of the four.
Giving the umpires more judgment on it, though. You know, there's another situation where, okay,
well, so they got on make balls and strikes, they got a lot less to think about, so
yeah,
they can focus on that.
That's true. You got a point right there. Well, Kevin, that was enough aggravation for one night for me. Before we talk about what's going on with Kevin these days, though, we do want to talk about upcoming series in the American Association. We are at a point now that it's time to start looking at these things. This weekend, we have Sioux City at Sioux Falls, St. Paul at Winnipeg, and Kansas City at Lincoln. Kevin, which of those series really kind of jump out at you right now?
I'm sorry, what were those?
I'm sorry, Sioux City at Sioux Falls, St. Paul at Winnipeg, and Kansas City at Lincoln.
Well, I think the big one's got to be the St. Paul and Winnipeg one because a series or a 4-1 advantage in either one of those series is going to give you a little bit of separation in the standings. The other two series of Sioux City and Kansas City both get 2 out of 3. You're still kind of muddled up in the South Division. So I'd have to say the St. Paul series looms as the big one.
Then starting next Tuesday, we get a rematch of the championship series as St. Paul heads to Kansas City, Sioux City heads to Fargo. Four teams that are really, we're probably going to be talking about in late August, that are going to be competing for playoff spots. So these series have kind of a playoff atmosphere to them right now because of the importance for later on.
Right. And St. Paul's getting a Kansas City team that seemed to be rounding in form too. So we'll see if St. Paul can reverse the nightmare that was their September trip down to T-Bone's ballpark. You know, as a much of a Saints fan as I am, you know, I like to listen to Dan Vaughn's play-by-play on MixLR, but it just pains me every time they do the open of the show and they're playing audio clips from the championship series last year. I have to turn it down for the 30 seconds while it's on. It still stings. But yeah, I mean, Sioux City Fargo series, that'd be a dynamite matchup too. And remember, there were some fireworks with those two teams last year, though I think there's been enough of a turnover in those clubs where I don't think it'll be a lot of bad blood. It'll be some good baseball.
Let's hope not, because we sure don't want a reoccurrence of last year. Well, Kevin, we had to wait a week, but we're excited because this week we're going to unveil the Kevin Lucco Power Rankings.
Yes, the American Association Power Rankings, brought to you by the 2019 Lee Greenwood Royalties Tour, just concluded this weekend. Number 12, the Texas Air Hogs. Coming in 11 are the Milwaukee Milkmen, which is their first appearance ever in the Power Rankings. New team. Number 10, Gary South Shore. Number 9 is Lincoln. Number 8 is Sioux Falls, who, you know, I've been doing the rankings for my blog, and that's probably the lowest I've had them all season. Number 7, Chicago. Cleburne up to number 6. That's probably the highest they've been. Number 5 are the Kansas City T-Bones. Number 4, Sioux City. Brad Allred's going to clobber me because I have Sioux City and Kansas City ahead of his rail orders. Number 3, Winnipeg Gold Eyes. Number 2, St. Paul. And number 1, as we talked about earlier, the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks.
Wow, so Cleburne out there at 6. Okay. That's very interesting.
Well,
So,
I'm
our
looking at, we talked about they haven't, they're winning games, but it's not, they're not the statement victories against teams ahead of them in the standings.
I think you have some valid arguments about that though,
That's
and
why it's
so
called power rankings.
I'm not saying that any of those predictions that you gave is wrong, but once again, for those who disapprove of that, you can find Kevin Lukow at his Twitter and Facebook accounts. So please voice your frustration and arguments with him there, please. Kevin, what else is going on with you these days? What's out there on the Kevin Lukow 10th inning stretch blog?
Well, yes. Other than the Saints recap, I did a story. I used my 4th of July to go to a town ball game in Dundas, Minnesota, which for people that live in Minnesota know that Dundas is one of the prime town ball baseball spots. But it was really neat because there was, Fourth of July is about doing stuff with your family. And there's a family connection with both teams, with Dundas and Northfield. For those that are familiar with the St. Paul Saints and Sam Mouse, Sam and his brother play for Northfield, and his older brother plays for Dundas. So he had three Mouse brothers playing in the game. Dundas had a couple of Carson and Tyler Jones playing for them. They combined for 7 RBIs that day. And for those that remember St. Paul around 2011, Todd Matheson pitched for the Saints at that time. Todd pitched on the 4th for Dundas, and his brother Jake pitched for Northfield. So, like I said, it was a family affair that day, and it was a nice day for a ball game, and I got a little write-up on the game. So, check that out on the blog.
Awesome. Out there at Minor League Sports Report, we've just been keeping up with the games that have been going on there and providing some articles about stuff happening around the league. Been a little slow this week just because Rob was prepping for his little treatment for today. So now we're hopefully got a little rehab to do, but otherwise doing okay. So but now we'll be just keeping up with stuff and shows and things going on around the league though. So a lot of fun
Your
stuff
day
going
to
on at the
day.
site. Exactly. A lot of fun stuff going on at the site there for you to check out. Well, Kevin, I know you have some.
Was it Keith Olbermann always used to say, "You stay today, but then again, aren't we all?"
Exactly. Well, Kevin, we know you have some final thoughts for us for this week.
Yes, I do, and I don't like to harp on this because we're only in July, but check out the attendance in the league, and I'm not liking what I'm seeing here. And I hate to pick on my friends north of the border, but I just think they're a prime example of what is wrong with the league right now. Boy, that just sounds bad. I said, don't get me wrong, I love Andrew Collier. He's done a great job with Winnipeg, but I think the Goldeye's organization. And nothing wrong with the on-field product. They've been fine. But they gotta kind of start thinking outside the box about promotions that are gonna draw fans, because what they're doing right now is not working. We just keep waiting for them to start popping the big crowds, and frankly, other than Canada Day, which was a national holiday, you really don't have to promote that too much. There just hasn't been much of a buzz around the ballpark as far as promotions going on. And I know the thing in Winnipeg, I've always heard that people saying, "Well, we don't want to be like St. Paul." Well, you don't have to be like St. Paul, but don't be doing what you're doing now. It's time to kind of look, get a little creative for promotions. Get it where people are going to the ballpark because of the promotion, and then they'll be impressed with the baseball later. Tonight, the promotion up there is baseball bingo. Frankly, I think teams need to start looking at drawing that fan that in that 24 to 35 demographic, and bingo's not going to get that done. And frankly, it's something to do with fans that are already at the game, but but it's not going to be something that's going to make someone go out and buy a ticket. So Winnipeg, it just seemed like every year it's the same promotion, Sam. They had Ukrainian night the other night. Well, does that make you want to go and buy a ticket? I talked to my blog. I did a blog last week about my evolution from being a fan to what I'm doing now. And I think I mentioned in there, one of the things when you got to the early part of the spring was when the Saints released their schedule, and you always looked at the promotional schedule, and that's what you start marking the games you want to go to. You didn't know how the team was going to be, but you knew the promotion was going to be good, and you wanted to be there for it. And I think that's what teams like Winnipeg, and you know who else? I'm going to throw Kansas City in that mix also, because the T-Bones are, they drew a nice 6,000 crowd last night, but for the year, they're fourth in the league for attendance at 3,600. And frankly, in that market, they should be drawing more fans than that. And I guess, frankly, I don't see a lot of creativity. I'm looking at 2015, they were drawing nearly 5,000 a night. So there's room to grow down there. So these teams in the bigger cities like Chicago, Winnipeg, Kansas City, you got a lot of people there looking for stuff to do. It's time to think out of the box and coming up these promotions that, well, frankly, maybe they're going to get the attention of the mainstream media. They don't have to be outrageous. You don't have to make you don't have to get political. You don't have to do stuff that's going to insult religious groups, but do something that's going to make people say, "I got to buy a ticket for that."
I couldn't agree with you more, and we live in an age now where people want to be entertained, and I think what makes baseball unique compared to any other sport is that it's not a continuous action sport. I listen to broadcasters. Some people are probably a little too young for this kind of thing, but I remember listening to broadcasters like Vin Scully and guys like that who talked about that. What separated baseball from any other kind of sport they ever broadcast on was the fact that it had all this filler. And if you watch the Harry Carey broadcast, I probably learned more about useless things that was completely non-baseball related with Harry Carey than about the game itself. Because the guy had to talk about all kinds of things, and Bob Uecker and all these guys kind of do that kind of stuff. So you have to draw people in with things that are not baseball related because they want something that is kind of filling in all that kind of gap thing. Hey, I don't want to just go for baseball. I want to go because you had Paw Patrol come out, and that'll get my little kids to want to go to this or whatever the case may be. There's great things out there to do. So, we love American Association Baseball, and we want to see this as the top independent league, which we already believe that it is, but we want to see it continue to do that. And that really comes from having just kind of over the top promotions and things that do something different and get people in the stands.
And that's why I'm kind of saddened by this because I mean I'm not trying this isn't rag on Winnipeg and Kansas City hour. This is me saying that I want to see games where I'm looking on the TV and I'm not seeing a slew of empty seats because players see that too. Who wants to go play in a ballpark where it's empty every night or they're padding the numbers? It doesn't make it an attractive option for a player, and our prices on other levels too, but we obviously focus on the American Association, and the Saints been going for the last year or so, you're only as good as your weakest link. So not saying Kansas City and Lincoln are weak, but you like to see every team drawing as many people as they possibly can. It's, yeah, sure, maybe some are going to think that, oh, great, yeah, these people are going to barely watch the game. Well, you know what? The person that leaves the ballpark that can't even tell you who played, and the hardcore fan that sat there and kept a scorecard and was hanging on every pitch, you know what they got in common? The color of the money was green.
Yeah, I would say they spent the same amount of money. So, you know, last year I had a great talk with Dan Vaughn about this, play-by-play guy up there in Kansas City, about what was going on down there in Texas. And I went for the Saints series down there in June, and I was kidding with Kevin, truthfully kidding, that during the day game that was down there, that I could literally stick my head out the press box and count how many people were sitting below me. And they were 26. And I thought, wow, this is really depressing. As a player, I mean, this just must be unbelievably depressing to watch a game like, to be playing in a game like this where there's nobody there. You know, I don't, what was the event where, was it the rioting going on in Baltimore where the Orioles played a game and there was no fans that were allowed? Was that right?
Yes.
Okay. And the players were talking about how horrible that was because it was like, you know, everything going on in the field, you could hear so perfectly. It was eerie. It was just not baseball. Okay. And I think players, when they see 40 people sitting in the stand or something like that, even a few hundred, it just doesn't look right. Okay. They know what's wrong with that. And they don't, it doesn't give the right kind of appearance where they want to play in that kind of thing. And Dan had talked about, you know, every one of these areas is in, has, these teams has an area where there are local, businesses and churches and other civic groups and things out there that they should say, hey, we'll give you, you know, some kind of incredible incentive to come out here. The Wichita Wing, that's one of the things I would give them credit for, is that they chose 50 groups every year out of the Wichita area and gave 1,000 tickets to each of those groups. For a night. So it was, you know, this group's night, here's 1,000 tickets for you to come out here. Okay. Well, okay. So you gave away $10,000 for people to get through the gate. But if they spent $25,000 at the concession stand, then who cares? Okay. And you got all these people that make the game more enjoyable to be there. So Dan was talking about, hey, give tickets away. Let people come out here for free and let them make you money in other ways. And I think it's time
to start
looking
at that. But only let them do that once.
Yeah, exactly. So a group gets to do that one time this year. Here you go. Here's your 1,000 tickets to come out here for this season. Here you go. But you're not getting it later in the season.
No, because what I've seen happen in areas where teams start giving away tickets too much, fans start waiting. Why should I go buy a ticket when I know I can go somewhere and get one for free?
Exactly.
Maybe you go to the well once on that, but if you start getting a reputation as being that team that's always handing out free tickets, it's a bad road to go upon because fans are going to just say, well, I'm not going until I get a free ticket. So that's great. Do it once. Get them to the ballpark. If they enjoy it, maybe they come back and buy a ticket next time. But, yeah, I would not go to that well too much.
I think you have a great point. And you and I actually talked about that a couple of years ago on the show, I believe, when there was still a – with that. So I'm trying to think if – no, it must have been – we were just discussing the Saints game when there was still a Joplin, and we were talking about that they weren't really drawing and that they should just kind of invite people to come in. And you're right. If you start doing that, then nobody's going to – you know, nobody's going to buy tickets at all. They're just not going to show up. They're just going to show up and go, okay, well, here's my free ticket. I'll go to every game you have, but I'm never going to pay anything. So you don't want to diminish the value of your team, but you got to start doing some things to getting people in there. And I think that Dan is spot on about this. So there's Kevin and I soapbox for today, which you can. Who's the soapbox sponsor?
Challenge.
Who's the soapbox sponsor, Kevin?
I'm just going to wear this one myself because I don't want people getting mad at a sponsor.
All right.
But you know what? That's my challenge to every marketing department and any team. The league average right now is right around 3,000. If you're hovering around that or if you're down 1,000 fans from so many years ago, there's my challenge. Push yourself to – yeah, I know your promotional schedule's already done, but – you can do something on a whim and add on to a promotion you're already running. Just think outside the box. You got all these interns. Let them be creative and have some fun with it. So that's my challenge to all the marketing departments in the entire league.
And you know, let me throw this out for you too. Is for fans out there, there are 10 teams in this league that legitimately have a playoff shot right now. Even if you're looking at a team like Lincoln that is 4 games under .500, they are 3.5 games out. Even Gary, 8.5 games out right now, is going to have a chance to make up a whole lot of games as Fargo, Winnipeg, and St. Paul are beating up on each other. And they got a lot of games within the division that they can beat those teams themselves. And you and I have watched Greg Taggart teams come from out of nowhere to win division titles.
Right.
There's 10 teams out there that could be making the playoffs, and then, you know, that extra fan push could be a difference maker. There's a brand new Milwaukee Milk Bend ballpark that you fans should
be. Yeah, we have to address that too.
Okay.
Yeah, you guys, if you get less than 1,000 people for that, that's inexcusable. I don't care if you played somewhere else. That should make people crave even more wanting to get out to the ballpark for the first time and see the place.
Exactly right. This is an opportunity to be one of the first people to see a magnificent looking ballpark. Okay, and a quality team. Let's not take anything away. Forget 19 and 26. This is a team that is in every game almost every night. Okay.
No, we're not talking Salina Stockade Part Two. We're talking a team that's got some quality players.
Absolutely. Well-run management, fun promotions they're doing there, great stuff going on.
I know they got a bobblehead night coming up.
Absolutely. And a fun little mascot kind of thing going on there. And they have done a lot of fun things out there. The whole promotion of the team with the milkman thing, I think, is funny and is very enlightening, you know, lighthearted in the way that this is done. Then you got these Texas Air Hogs. You know, you may not be excited about a group of Chinese players playing there, but you could potentially be watching 10, 12 guys that are playing the Olympics 5 years from now. You know, and I don't know, but I think that's kind of a big deal. Okay. If this was, and I watched hockey. Part of the reason that I enjoyed the NHL was because you got to see guys that you knew were going to be competing in the Olympics until they were dumb and didn't do that last time. But it was like, I'm going to get to see who's going to be on that Russian team or who's going to be on that German team or whatever. That's kind of fun. Okay. And I think for fans, if you really get out there, you're going to be watching some guys that maybe, you know, it wouldn't it be cool if one of these guys had a big hit in the Olympics and came off the field and got a microphone for NBC stuck, you know, reporter stuck a microphone in his face. He said, wow, I really got my big advantage because of the great fans in Texas, you know, that you could have your name out there from that. That would just be awesome. Well, get out there and support that kind of thing. Cause there are 12 great reasons to be at your team's ballpark right now.
But within that, the marketing team's got to ramp it up to give them additional reasons to come out, especially if they're just casual fans. And I'm mentioning Winnipeg and Kansas City and Chicago, but you also got to throw Milwaukee in there because they're in the metropolitan area too with a brand new ballpark. And, you know, you didn't have the greatest weather, but the fans, the turnouts were not good for their first series. So I challenge your marketing team too to you're going to have to ramp it up a little bit and get some butts in the seats.
Yeah, you can't assume just because you got a brand new ballpark that people are coming out. You know, I mean, that just can't be the assumption that you're making there. You know, I do want to pat Lincoln on the back. They came within 90
well,
fans.
Well, this has been excellent.
Yeah, they came within 90 fans this year on a Saturday night of breaking their all-time attendance record. And they're drawing a little over 3,500 there. I think the stadium holds like 4,200. So that's pretty good because that's not a huge ballpark, okay? And they are drawing good crowds out there. So whatever Lincoln's doing out there, you guys are doing a great job. And I'm encouraging other teams out there to start calling around and going, hey, what are you guys doing? And you know, let's see if we can emulate some of that because they're getting it right there.
Yeah, I mean, there's no shame in copying what other teams are doing because, frankly, there's not a lot of spillover of fan bases where no one's going to say, well, they're doing something that they're also doing in Fargo, or, you know, you're not going to get that. So your own fans are going to think you're being original. And you look at it, Lincoln, a much smaller market than Kansas City, they're right on Lincoln's, right on Kansas City's tails, only drawing
31
fewer fans a game. So,
yeah,
you look at that. It was a good job at Lincoln.
Same number of home dates this year with 20 each, and they are 600 fans less overall in those 20 dates. So, you know, they're doing some outstanding things out there. So, and, you know, and hats off to Chicago this year for having, you know, they have kind of started to win a crowd there at 3,800. They're averaging. We saw a lot of small crowds last year as the team was kind of starting to build up a name, and they're starting to have some success with that. So good for them out there. But, we love American Association Baseball, and we want to start seeing people getting out there. You know, and we harp on this every year, Kevin, and we're going to harp on it one more time. Before we walk away for this, we have really harped on a lot of teams about promoting things. But, man, Sioux City fans, you got to get out there. You have the best team in the league over the last 5 years record-wise, okay? And they don't have a championship to show for that, but so what? That's a great ball club, great run ball club, great manager. Nate Sampson's one of the best guys you're ever going to watch in independent baseball ever, okay? You're watching a true legend in your organization right there, getting to play every night. One of the nicest guys, one of the most approachable guys you'll ever come across. If you're not going out there to enjoy that, there's seriously something wrong with you. I'm sorry, that's just crazy.
Well, I don't think Sioux City is promoting their team that strong either, but it's Sioux City. What else are people doing?
Yeah.
I've had to try to kill time in Sioux City. I don't know what there would be to do other than go to the ballpark.
Yeah, it's not hockey season, so you got nothing else right now. So, you know, there's really no reason to not be out watching that team right now. And again, fantastic club, always going to be in the race. You're going to see. So what have they had so far this year? Four or five guys that have been signed by affiliate clubs. They've had three guys this season that made it to the majors. Okay. So, you know, if you want to see future major leaguers, forget your AAA team. There's a club right there in Sioux City. You don't need to go to Des Moines. Okay, go see that. You can be right there in Sioux City and see guys that have a real good shot at making the major leagues because they're making it right now. You know, so stop wasting your time with deciding to go do something else in Sioux City. I don't know what you're doing, but man, that's a quality.
I don't know, but I don't know. I think we just blew any chance of getting sponsored by the Sioux City Chamber of Commerce.
Well, I think, you know, I'm sorry. I love this league, and I enjoy watching all of these guys out there and playing. And even if your team is way out of the race, even if you're the Texas Air Hogs and you got 8 victories and it's already going to be, in your opinion, a very long summer, you get to see some great talent come to your ballpark. You have a great rivalry with Cleburne. Texas has played outstanding against them every game this season. You have, you're going to get to see some great teams, some great players. You have a great manager there in Chris Bando, who is teaching some players that are going to be one day Olympians. Okay. I mean, I still, that kind of just boggles the mind. This is going to be an Olympic group sometime. Okay. Well, you got to get excited about that. I mean, I'm sorry. You just got to. And so, get out there.
Yes, and you know, as I was getting back to Winnipeg again, there was a stretch when the Twins moved to Target Field, and the talk was about how rundown Midway Stadium was getting, where Winnipeg passed up St. Paul for amateur attendance. And tell you what, some fans of Winnipeg really let us know about that. So, first instinct would be to throw it right back in their face now, but no, I'm not going to do that because I want the league to be strong from top to bottom, so that's why I'm throwing out this constructive criticism. And this is already broke the record for the longest final thought.
You know, and I think a thing that we want to leave out there too is that you're not just talking about the great players that you're going to get to see, but If independent baseball ever has a Hall of Fame, which they should, but let's say that they do one day, Rick Forney is going to be like a first time entry. Okay, you're watching a guy who's done an amazing job, not just in winning championships, but can you think of a manager that's had a major leaguer playing on his roster for 5 straight seasons because the guy just loves playing there? That's just,
Right, isn't it?
I mean, you talk about the respect you must have earned from that. That man, get out there and watch your manager. Watch, a guy who figured out how to win games year after year after year after year for you. Ah,
Right.
Kevin, what
The
can you
Jets
do?
aren't the only winning team in Winnipeg.
That's right. And I don't think they have as they won't be winning as many championships as they will be across town at the baseball stadium. No offense to those Jets, but I'm not expecting to see them winning 2 Stanley Cups in the next 4 or 5 years. So let's be realistic about it. Well, now that we've given you our 2 cents for the well, actually, we're going to say 10 cents for the day. We want to thank you for joining us this week. For Kevin Lucco, I am Rob Pannear, and we will see you next time on This Week in the Association.